Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, November the 11th. And our top story today is that it's been revealed almost 3,000 fines have been issued to drivers ignoring new school street rules in Medway. Now, cars have been banned from several roads around seven sites during key times to bring down the number of children being injured at pick-up and drop-off. Now, the idea was introduced back in March, but between then and September was a bit of breathing space. Drivers breaking the rules were just given a warning letter. However, in the 1 month since the rules became enforceable, motorists have been told to pay a total of tens of thousands of pounds. Well, we've been getting reaction to this story. First, let's hear from Councillor George Perfect, who's leader of the opposition at Medway Council.
We've always been very clear that whilst we support in our urban core, so in our really very highly congested town centre areas of Chatham and Gillingham, we support school streets where there is clear public support and support from the schools themselves. We have concerns about them being located in some other parts of the authority area, particularly in Raynham and elsewhere, where there clearly isn't public support and there is questions about the schools themselves if they wish to see them as well.
I've spoken to a few drivers. They say that some of the signage isn't clear going down there. I don't know if you've seen some of the signs going into school streets yourself. I mean, do you think actually the signage is clear enough that a driver is about to enter a school street and get a ticket?
No, I don't think so. And I think the problem is in parts of London and other places around the UK, these have been implemented in the past where there are significant levels of traffic measures. We don't have those type of traffic enforcement measures within Medway, particularly we haven't had them in the past. And therefore, that means that we really need to be, and the council themselves really need to be taking a proactive approach in engaging with residents, doing that market testing around what signs work and what don't. And where clearly they aren't working and there's significant amount of fines being issued, need to look at what measures they can put in place in order to mitigate them. Because at the end of the day, if the council, as they have been previously, have been clear that they don't believe that this is a revenue raising measure, then they should be doing everything they can to ensure that people don't access those spaces and therefore thus aren't raising revenue.
We can also hear now from Councillor Alex Patterson. He's head of Community Safety, Highways and Enforcement at Medway Council.
I think things are moving in the right direction because ultimately this is the prize that we're looking for. We're looking for streets where the number of cars are vastly reduced outside schools. There's a very simple reason for that. Every month, around 1,200 children are injured on the road, on their way to school, within 500 metres of the school. So if we can take as many cars as we can out of that equation, then that inherently makes those journeys safer.
We've got an FOI which shows that lots of parents are still getting fines or getting caught on the cameras going down school streets. At some roads we're talking about 300 cars. What would you say to parents or just general people who are still going through those streets?
No, the simple message to anyone who is ignoring these signs is stop, read the signs and follow the rules. This isn't difficult, and I think at this stage we can say safely that people know what the rules are. While I'm happy that the figures are moving in the right direction and that those numbers of PCNs being issued are reducing month on month as the message gets through, you have to remember that every single one of those PCNs is a driver who has either carelessly, recklessly or deliberately ignored the rules and put children in danger. I'm not prepared to accept that. If you do that, you will be fined.
I think some of those drivers might say that the signs are quite small. I know I've definitely spoken to a few in the past on other stories, and they say it's easy to drive past them, but once they've done it, they won't make the mistake again. But their first time, you know, I mean, they just didn't realise it was a school street. Is there something that could be done to make the signage more obvious that they are driving into a school street?
Well, what I would start by saying is that the signage that we have put up in Medway for school streets is in excess of the statutory minimum. We have gone above and beyond what is legally required. So that means, according to the Highway Code, that you are expected to pay attention to the road signs. If you're telling me that you haven't got time to read the road sign, bluntly, you're going too fast. And if you're going too fast at a time when the school streets are in operation, you're a danger to other road users and to pedestrians.
Now, George and Alex are both speaking to the local Democracy Reporting Service, and you can also watch a report within the story and on KMTV. We'd also like to know what you think. perhaps you have been fined. What was your reaction when you had that letter through the post? Or maybe you think it's a really good idea to keep children safe on the school run. You can jump onto Kent Online and comment within the story, or indeed you can send us a message on our socials.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories for you today, and a Kent toddler has spent 4 days in a coma after getting food poisoning on an all-inclusive holiday in Egypt. Two-year-old Chloe Crook became seriously ill while away with her parents in July. She's now back home but is still on medication. Lawyers are investigating who's to blame. A Kent hospital's apologised after mistakenly telling a woman she had hepatitis shortly after she'd suffered a miscarriage. Chelsea Wright noticed the serious liver issue had been noted on her records following surgery at Medway Maritime Hospital. Bosses admitted the error as soon as it was highlighted and say they've taken action to make sure it doesn't happen again. Some news from court, and an Ashford man who sent his ex hundreds of abusive messages after she ended their relationship has been given a restraining order. A court heard how Johnny Blackmore even set up a new account to contact her when she blocked his number. The 26-year-old from Smarden Road has also been ordered to do unpaid work. Elsewhere, a woman's been sentenced after forcing her way into a home in Gillingham and stealing a disabled woman's phone. Carmen Hart raided a property on the high street while out on bail for offences including threatening behaviour and assault. The 27-year-old from Fox Street in Gillingham has been given a 5-year restraining order and will have to do 40 hours of unpaid work. Now, next today, Kent Online's been hearing about the important role cadets play in Kent as we mark Remembrance Day. Hundreds of cadets attended services yesterday, and many will be in uniform today, as silences were also held at 11 o'clock. Now, they represent the Army, Air Force, Navy, Police, Fire Service and St John's Ambulance. I've been speaking to Brigadier Andrew Wood, who's a Deputy Lieutenant in Kent, but also Chair of the committee that oversees the cadets in the county.
I mean, I'm still a serving soldier, and you know, what we're doing is we're remembering not just the armed forces, but their families from Britain and the Commonwealth that played such a vital role in the First and Second World Wars. But it's more than that, because we look to remember those innocent civilians who have lost their lives in conflict and acts of terrorism as well.
Obviously, there are conflicts going on around the world at the moment. Do you think it makes it even more poignant when we can stand there and we know about things that are going on in, say, places like Ukraine and the Middle East? It's a time for all of us to reflect, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, society today is so busy. Everybody is so wrapped up with work, family life. That opportunity to go silent and reflect for 2 minutes is massively important. And it's not just important for members of the armed forces, it's important for everybody in society to reflect in their own way.
Obviously, historically, the poppy is a very significant symbol. We all recognise it, and wreaths of poppies will be laid across the country. What does the poppy mean to you and its symbolism?
Well, having stood on Victoria Railway Station in London within the last week to raise money for the poppy appeal, for me, the significance of wearing the poppy, and for the thousands, hundreds of thousands, probably millions of people that wear the poppy, it's a show of support for the service and sacrifice of our armed forces, but also it remembers our veterans and those souls that we lost. So it's very significant. I mean, I've lost colleagues and friends in modern conflicts, the Bosnian War, Iraq, Afghanistan. So it's the whole remembrance. It's not just the First World War and the Second World War.
And on parade on Sunday, and indeed on Monday, we will see an awful lot of young people who are part of the cadets, which you represent. How important is it for them and for younger people to know what happened in perhaps those more historic conflicts, but also to play their part in remembrance events?
Yeah, I think it's very important. We all learn a lot from history. And because so many grandparents who would have fought in the Great Wars, the First and the Second World War, are now no longer with us, it's incumbent on teachers and youth organisations to make sure that young people nowadays understand what happened in the past. And to understand what happened in the past could potentially stop the same mistakes being made in the future. And the great thing about the cadet experience is the cadets are represented not just by the three armed services of the Royal Navy, the Army and the Royal Air Force. They're also represented by the police, the Fire and Rescue Service, and also St John's Ambulance. So you have a whole plethora of young people, the cadet experience, as we call it, making or taking their opportunity to make their mark on Remembrance Day, which I think is hugely, hugely important, because the youth of today are the future of this country.
Thank you so much to Brigadier Wood for chatting to us. And you can see pictures from Remembrance events in Kent by heading to the website.
Kent Online reports.
Four men have been arrested after 400 kilograms of cocaine was found on a fishing boat off the Kent coast. There was a huge emergency response at Ramsgate Harbour yesterday morning as the vessel was intercepted by Border Force. Now, three men on board were detained on suspicion of importing Class A drugs, while a fourth was arrested at an address in East London. This is one of our most read stories on the website today. Customers say they're devastated after a garden centre near Hawkhurst announced its sudden closure. Merriment's Gardens in Hurst Green will be shutting next Thursday after 35 years. Bosses say the freehold's been sold and the new owner doesn't want to continue with the business. £4 million worth of fines have been mistakenly handed out to drivers for using the Dartford crossing. National Highways cancelled 59,000 penalties after switching to a private contractor to manage Dart charge payments. That's compared to 3,500 cancelled fines the year before. A drunk driver who crashed his car into the back of another vehicle at a Medway roundabout has been banned from driving for more than 2 years. Kestutis Rubiska was more than three times the limit when it happened at Four Elms in Wainscot. The 45-year-old, who now lives in Dagenham in Essex, also didn't have a licence and must do unpaid work. Now, more than one XL bully a week has been seized and destroyed in Kent since the breed was banned, according to new figures. Laws introduced in February following a spate of attacks means it's illegal to own the dogs without a valid exemption certificate. Data seen by the Kent Online podcast shows 68 of the animals were seized by police in the county in the first 6 months of the ban, with 34 put down. Now, Lauren Sharkey is a dog behaviour expert from Winnie's World in Maidstone, and she's been speaking to Lucy.
The hard thing about the ban is that XL Bully is not a specific breed, it's a type of dog, and that's what the law is, it's a type. So any dog that fits those specific measurements could theoretically come under that. So whether they are genetically what you want to call XL Bully or anything like that, we don't know, because again, some dogs could fit it, some may not. So you may have more that fit into that than just the XL Bully type, if that makes sense. I think, again, it's probably not because we do have a lot of bull breeds in this country. People do love them. They are great dogs. So I think, again, it's probably not surprising. And I think a lot of owners may have struggled with restrictions or maybe implementing those restrictions in the way that the law has asked them to. And again, maybe some owners did not realise that their dog fell under that, again, because we have this measurement thing and certain people may think that the dog fits those measurements. Some other people may not. So it is a really, really tough law, I think, for owners and for everybody kind of in the industry as well.
What is it about XL bullies that makes them potentially more dangerous than other breeds?
I think we have a real problem with using kind of the word dangerous with dogs, because when we start saying that some breeds of dog are more dangerous than others, it leads people to think that certain breeds of dog are not dangerous. And it's really important to remember that any dog can and will bite if they feel the need to. So some of my most severe aggression cases this year have actually been a spaniel and a golden retriever. So again, dogs that people probably would not expect that to be. But we have to remember that all dogs can and will bite. That's not saying all dogs are going to do that. But I think particularly when we've got with XL bullies, They are a very, very strong dog. At the end of the day, obviously bigger, more stronger dogs have the ability to cause more damage if they do bite. And certain types of dogs also have different what we call bite styles. So, for example, bull breeds can have a bit more of a ragging bite style, which means they grab things and kind of shake it. That can cause more internal injury. So again, you can get more damage from a bite than potentially another breed might do with the same level of bite. I think, again, it's not necessarily that the dogs are more dangerous and I don't support the ban. I think it's because, again, we do have that massive strength there. That again, of course, there probably are bites that are going on, but we don't see them maybe coming to the media so much because, again, maybe the damage isn't in so much. And of course, there's not so much focus on the other breeds as there are on the XL bullies. But I don't think it's necessarily their kind of behaviour that is necessarily worrying. I think what is worrying is kind of the irresponsible breeding that we have. That's first and foremost what we should be looking at, as that really probably is the root cause of where a lot of these problems start from. People breeding for looks rather than a stable temperament, not looking after the parent dogs properly, stress can pass through to puppies, not adequately socialising puppies. And then we also have irresponsible ownership that can then follow on from that. So that can be things like using harsh training methods that we know increase the risk of aggression instead of reward-based methods, which is what scientifically we now know is the most modern way and best way of working with animals and dogs. We don't have a regulated training industry either. So what I do, anybody can set up and do that tomorrow and work with dogs with really severe problems, which again, that shouldn't really be happening. And I think as well, just as a society, a lot of us don't have a basic understanding of dog behaviour and dog body language. We put dogs in situations they struggle with. We leave kids alone with dogs a lot. Doesn't matter if you think your dog's never done anything. It can happen very, very quickly and it can be an accident. But again, I think we say we're a nation of dog lovers, but we don't necessarily sort of care to think about kind of the intricacies of it. And it doesn't mean you have to go and do a whole degree or anything like that, but just kind of taking a look at your dog, taking a look at dogs on the street, understanding a little bit about their body language and seeing, are they actually comfortable in this situation or can I just get them out of this situation before anything escalates? I think if we all kind of thought a little bit about that, we'd probably have a lot less incidents, not just with XL bullies, but with kind of dogs across the board.
25 XL bullies are currently being held in police custody kennels.
Kent Online reports.
Next today, we're going to hear a really interesting story that our reporter Ellie Hodgson has been working on. And it's looking at something called digital exclusion. You've probably noticed that everyday tasks like paying for parking or even ordering a meal in the restaurant are becoming more and more linked to technology. You might need to download an app or scan a QR code. And while for some it's brought huge benefits and they find it really easy, what about those who struggle with adapting and maybe don't even own the technology to be able to do it? Well, first, let's hear from William Proctor. William is 85. He's a retired photographer and he's from East Peckham.
It all seems to be moving so fast for us. Well, me, as I'm getting older. I hate the tills in the supermarkets. That I won't go to. That's put somebody out of work in my book. And it's just to save money. So, no, I'm not happy with that. Technology in itself, especially with the phones, I keep losing my password. Surgeries, you have to phone and book. And if you want to book online, you have to go down there and show them paperwork, proof of address. So, no, I'm not happy with that at all. No, I think it would be a very good thing if everybody, when they bought a computer, say, had a little course that goes with it. They want to give you this and give you that, but they don't know exactly how to use it. And I found now a lot of stuff that I buy doesn't have any instructions with it.
Next, we can hear from Suzanne Boyle, who's a volunteer at the Salvation Army in East Peckham.
A lot of elderly people are now being expected to deal with hospital appointments, booking COVID appointments, and doing many things online. And many elderly people don't have internet. My parents do not have the internet. And so when they phone the doctor's surgery and they're asked, well, can you send a picture? They can't send a picture, and it's very, very frustrating for them because they just can't deal with anything like that. And I have to do it for them, which is great if I'm around, but if I'm not, then it isn't so good. So
now companies and organisations just assume everyone has the internet, and that really isn't the case.
David Boyle is another volunteer, and he agrees that technology is becoming an issue for those who are elderly.
There's things these days that they need to do. Car parking, for example. You can't just put your money in anymore. You've got to join the club, and you've got to have the right cards and that to do it, and the right phones to do it. And then often when you try to set up, there's no signal on your phone, so you can't even set up to do it at all. So what do you do then? You need to find someone to pay, and that's okay for me. I can walk a bit and find one, but a lot of them can't, so they've immediately got a problem. And when it doesn't even matter, even their COVID jabs and all that sort of thing, they can't just phone up the doctor and say, yes, okay, let's do that. They have to fill in a form, it has to be emailed or attached to something, and they don't know what these things mean yet. And although, so as I say, although it is going to happen one day, it's way too early for everything to be going that way, for people just to be able to manage with it.
So we've heard there about the concerns, and the good news is that projects are taking place in Kent to try and help. One is called Digital Hubs, which is run by the County Council. And the team there have told us that they've recently been working with gas and electricity suppliers to deliver workshops that support people to access their bills and energy efficiency tools online. Now, the aim is to improve digital inclusion and capabilities across the whole of Kent, and they work with partners including the NHS and utility companies to support better education, employment, financial and health opportunities. Now, the digital hubs are part of a project, Digital Kent, and they're advertised in local libraries and at GP surgeries to ensure that people do get the support that they need. And also, you can find a link to those by heading to the story today on the website.
Kent Online News.
A new co-working space at a shopping centre in Medway is set to welcome its first entrepreneurs. £1.8 million has been spent on converting half of the first floor of the Pentagon Shopping Centre in Chatham into offices. It's hoped it'll provide more opportunities for small and medium-sized businesses. A youth centre in Maidstone is at risk of closing if it can't raise £10,000 before Christmas. The Harmony Community Arts Centre has been running for 25 years and helps organise the town's pride events. Staff are trying to raise £60,000 in total as they struggle with a lack of funding to cover bills, wages and equipment costs. Now, it's been revealed a council's paid out nearly £400,000 maintaining and securing a derelict music venue in Kent. It's been, would you believe, 2 years since the Winter Gardens in Margate closed after the company running it handed back the lease. Now, we've been chatting to Steve McKenna. He runs the Margate Bay Guest House, which is directly opposite.
Part of our business plan, I can remember writing the business plan, presenting that to the bank. We had the Turner Contemporary as a project up and coming, but also the Winter Gardens. And even when we bought this, we had so many bookings, future bookings, all related to the shows at the Winter Gardens. And yes, the Winter Gardens has been really good because there was so much during October, November. But now it's closed. Yeah, it's had a major impact. It's really sad. Dreamland's picking up a lot of the music events now, so that's helping. But we do need to have the Winter Gardens restored.
Because what was it like those like 20 years when you were running this business, when you had these great, fantastic musical and comedy acts coming in, when you have people drinking outside, like in the evenings in the summertime? What was it kind of like in this kind of part of Margate? Well, I can imagine it's quite beautiful.
It was great, and the Winter Gardens definitely had an impact, and it created activity. You know, even when people were leaving the shows, you'd hear the hassle and bustle of the taxis arriving, the people outside. There was weddings there at the weekend, business events. It was so much more activity. It was a place to be. We had people coming down in coaches. The British Legion used to hold their annual event there. People used to have evening meals with us and then go across and see the show. So yeah, it's been a part of the Bay Guest House. And if you go back even many, many years, the shows, the stars used to come across, so I've been told, and drink in the bar downstairs. So all the entertainers knew about the guest houses.
Steve there was speaking to Ollie from our colleagues at KMTV. Clearly it's had a bigger impact on his business. Well, Thanet District Council say a process of identifying potential new operators is ongoing, and it's thought we could get an update on that in the next few weeks. It's feared the historic skyline of Faversham could be impacted if plans for a mobile phone mast are approved. The 16-metre EE and 3 tower would be put on a 10-metre building, meaning it would be much taller than the nearby church and brewery. Residents are calling for a full and open consultation. And it's feared drivers could be distracted by 3 new digital billboards planned for Dover. An application's been put in to install the LED advertising boards on York Street, and they'd show a new image every 10 seconds. But there are also concerns there'll be an eyesore. A decision will be made by the end of the year.
Kent Online Sports.
Football Now and the Gillingham managers praised his team for ending their long run of games without a win. They beat League Two leaders Port Vale 1-0 at Priestfield on Saturday. Mark Bonner spoke to us after the match.
Yeah, we're buzzing. Let's have it right. We're relieved, firstly, because we've needed a win. And today was always going to be a tough one to win. But the fact that we beat a team 1-0, who were unbeaten in 10 or whatever it is, 2 back-to-back manager of the month, they're absolutely flying. Built a gap so that they're still top. You know, they've had an incredible run. And they had a really good chance second half. But other than that, we've given nothing, absolutely nothing. I thought without the ball, we were absolutely brilliant. Our pressing intensity in the first half an hour was just class. And in the end, we had some really good spells of control without creating loads in a few of those moments. Substitutes, excellent impact in the game, and even in the end, didn't feel like we were hanging on. We were holding the game, really. And so, yeah, we're absolutely delighted. And overall, huge credit to the staff, huge credit for the players, because the best thing I can say is after a run that we're on, we haven't looked like a team that's on that run at all. We've been proper at it, and they deserve it. Everyone deserves that winning feeling again. It's been too long. But it puts us in a really nice position, really, after a horrible run, third of the season gone. We'd have taken this at the start. We wouldn't have taken it after the first 6 weeks because we wanted more than we've had. But we've come out the right side of it today, and I'm absolutely delighted with the result. I don't care that it wasn't a classic at all. I thought we were good. I thought we were worthy of the win. And I think it's a huge result against a team absolutely flying, and everyone will look at their phones and everyone would have come today thinking, I hope we win, but no one would have given us a chance. And huge credit to the lads for finding that level, finding that performance, sticking together when people lose a bit of faith. It's easy to do that, but they haven't. And it's a huge result for us, and we'll be so much stronger for it. And the fact that we get it and now we don't have a really busy period of league games is excellent for us, I think.
Jaden Clark got the goal and has also given reporters his reaction to the result.
A little bit of relief to finally get a win, which I think we've deserved. Obviously, it's been a while since we last got a win, which everyone knows. I think we played well today. We're just happy that we've got a win under our belt.
Talk me through the goal. And I just seem surprised that you'd scored with a header. But talk me through the goal.
It was a quick throw, Jack Nolan. Yeah. Pretty sure it was through it to Connor Masterson. You know, I was a little bit shocked to see him there. And then obviously I knew he was going to cross it. I was thinking he was going to like maybe flash it. And then I don't know, before I knew it, the ball was just coming towards my head. I'm not really known for my heading. A couple of the boys in the change room take the mick out of me for my heading. So yeah, I was happy to score a header. Happy to get a win.
And it's not too long to wait to see the Gills back in action. They're taking a break from the league, though, to play in the EFL Trophy tomorrow. That's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.